Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
You're listening to The Brian Lehrer Show on WNYC. I'm Mike Pesca in for Brian Lehrer. And you just heard Patricia Smith say, we don't ask the workers their immigration status. As a result, they busted this sweatshop. Let's contrast this with what happened in Postville, Iowa. Back in May, immigration authorities performed what became the biggest raid in U.S. history at a kosher meat processing plant in Postville, Iowa. Nearly 400 illegal immigrants at Agriprocessors, Inc. were detained. 297 of them were sentenced with federal crimes. While this was happening, stories began trickling out about the cruel labor practices of the plant. Most of the workers are Guatemalan immigrants, and some are underage. Some were duct taped or beaten. They were almost all paid less than minimum wage. And the question of Postville is, how do you define justice in this case? Because many of them were deported. Julia Preston, national immigration reporter for the New York Times, has been covering the story. Welcome to WNYC, Julia.
Thank you for having me.
So, aside from the scope, what was so extraordinary about this raid?
Well, a couple of things. One was the way that it was carried out. Black Hawk helicopters, the very large number of immigration agents swooping into this town quasi-military gear and appearance. And the other thing that was quite unusual was the very large number of criminal charges, federal felony charges that were brought against the immigrants for different kinds of document fraud.
What usually happens in an immigration case like this?
Well, up to now, most of these raids have been handled through the immigration court, which is a civil court. It's an administrative court. And so the workers are usually very rapidly deported. In this case, the criminal charges were brought, and the authorities in Iowa set up a special emergency court in the National Cattle Congress, which is a fairground in Waterloo, Iowa. And in fast-track proceedings in May, 297 of the immigrant workers were they took pleas, they accepted plea agreements, and they were sentenced, most of them, to 5 months in federal prison for various forms of document fraud.
And you detailed how many of them at a time would share one interpreter. The implication seemed to be that they were explained, this is the best you're going to get. They took the plea. A lot of them needed to get back to their families, in some cases young children.
Well, the what happened here was that the prosecutor brought very tough charges and said that if the pleas that were offered were not accepted, that he would try these immigrants on charges that carried a mandatory 2-year sentence in prison. And so really the immigrants in almost no case, in very few, a handful of these cases, these immigrants had prior criminal records of any sort. And so they really just were expecting to be deported, and they wanted to be deported. They are workers, and they were essentially in the United States because they had families to support in Guatemala or here. And so their motivation was really to try and get the process over as quickly as possible, which some attorneys have argued that undermined the application of due process in those courts.
There seem like there are two issues in this case. One was a huge number of illegal workers, and the second is horrible conditions of the plant. So on the one hand, you might want to protect the workers from those conditions. On the other hand, what the federal authorities did is they prosecuted the workers for being illegal. How did the federal agencies define the problem? Was this a problem of cleaning up the plant, or was this a problem of prosecuting workers?
Well, the prosecution of the workers took priority over everything else, so that there were state and federal labor investigations going on at the plant when the raid took place, and those investigations were disrupted by the raid. made initially. One of the, I guess you could say, perhaps perverse consequences of the raid, however, is that you now have dozens, if not hundreds, of workers who really feel that they have nothing left to lose and have kind of lost their fear of speaking out about what their working conditions were. And it was, for example, as a result of the raid and of the workers being in that situation that we learned that there were at least 27 workers who were under 18 years old in Iowa. No worker can be employed on the floor of a meatpacking plant who is under 18 years old because it's very dangerous work. And the number of 27 was quite noticeable and alarming to officials at Iowa, and it has served to refuel the investigations into the conditions in that plant.
And if you wish to weigh in on the tension between prosecution and protection, give us a call at 646-778-3729. Also, there's a real New York angle to this because many in our listening audience keep kosher, and this was a kosher plant. And it was a notorious kosher plant because the Jewish Forward newspaper had reported on it a couple of years ago for the practices of how they prepared their meat and so forth. How is it affecting the kosher butchers, if in the Jewish community, in the people who keep kosher, are you having discussions about the ethics of the brand name Aaron's Best, which is well known? The number for that, again, 646-778-3729. Can you talk a little bit about the fact that this was the biggest kosher meat processing plant in America, Julia?
Well, yes, and this, of course, makes the process of the slaughter of the beef quite different, and there are a large number of rabbis who are employed by the plant and oversee the slaughtering process and the processing of the meat on the line. But it did seem to that there was a large discrepancy between the care that was given to the slaughter process and the attention that was given to the working conditions for the immigrants in that plant. I also covered the Swift raids, which took place in December 2006, and one of the Swift plants was in Iowa, in Marshalltown, Iowa. And I was quite struck by the difference between the conditions in those two plants. The workers at agriprocessors immediately started to talk about unpaid overtime, working at night, even when they didn't want to, inadequate training for jobs, so that very often they would be working one job and they would be suddenly shifted to another job that involved using a knife or some other kind of potentially dangerous work. There was a case where some of the workers actually went on a sort of mini strike because the supervisors wanted to shift them to a job that involved knife work that they were not trained for. And the young immigrant that I wrote about in my story, who was 16 years old when he started, described an episode where he was kicked by a supervisor in a way that caused one of his knives to fly out of his scabbard and cut his elbow. And this injury required stitches. He was taken to a nearby hospital, and then he was not allowed to take any downtime. He was ordered back to work immediately so that the following day he was lifting a cow's tongue off the line, and his stitches ruptured again, and he was not allowed to leave the plant. He was the injury was covered with a Band-Aid, essentially, in the plant, and then he was put back to work again. This young man was 17 years old when this was happening.
Are they prosecuting the bosses?
So far, two supervisors have been, floor supervisors, have been indicted for immigration violations, for harboring illegal immigrants, and one supervisor has been also, there's a warrant out for his arrest. He's a fugitive. But that is the highest level so far in terms of charges being brought. However, there is quite an array of investigations going on now. The federal investigators and immigration authorities are still investigating. There's a grand jury in Iowa, federal and state labor, the EEOC, the Equal Employment Opportunity Commission, is looking into sexual harassment allegations. There have been two civil suits that I know of for Fair Labor Standards Act violations. So I think the answer is stay tuned on that. We have to see what comes out of those investigations.
Antonia from Fort Lee, New Jersey. You're on WNYC with Julia Preston of the New York Times. Go ahead, Antonia.
Thank you very much. I'd like to bring up one point. It was described as document fraud. From what I understand, document fraud includes person ID theft. What happened is Social Security numbers were supplied to many of these people, and that was used to document their citizenship status. So when you say document fraud, it sounds like, well, maybe they copied driver's license. But what they literally did between the employers and the illegal workers is that they stole identities. This is not a trivial task for the people who have been victimized to repair. And I really think that aspect needs to be brought up. It's not just the institution of labor law being impacted. It's also the citizens of the country and their credit ratings. That's a huge thing. I don't take my answer off the air.
All right. Thank you, Antonio. What about that? Is that the way that people get documents to work in a factory? Does it always or almost always include identity fraud? Julia?
This is quite a significant problem. However, in the case of the agriprocessors workers, to my knowledge, there was only one claim of an actual U.S. citizen or legal immigrant whose identity was used by a worker at the plant. So there are two different things that can happen. One is the situation that the caller is talking about, and that is a very significant problem, and it can be a terrible situation for the citizen whose documents are used. The other thing that happens is that people manufacture fraudulent documents that do not relate necessarily to a specific identity.
Right.
And that seems to have been the situation of most of the workers in this plant. It's still not a trivial offense. I agree with the caller about that. But the charges that the prosecutor held over these cases was that they would prosecute for aggravated identity theft, which does generally imply that there is a real person whose identity was stolen. And because that charge carries a two-year mandatory minimum, most of the immigrants just didn't feel like they were in a position to go to trial, and risk being convicted on that charge.
Right. Jess from White Plains. Jess, you're on WNYC. Hi.
Hi, good morning. Well, I just wanted to respond. I am an Orthodox Jew,
mm-hmm.
We obviously keep a kosher house. This issue has been a major issue in both in my house and in the synagogue that I attend here in White Plains. The rabbi has made a point of explicitly addressing the real just ethical human from sort of a side of human rights ethical violations of Rubashkin's. I personally and my wife we won't buy their products. We make efforts to research where the meat that we're buying comes from. There's only so many kosher shops that you
right.
can buy meat.
Rubashkin's is one of the two. Aaron's Best and Rubashkin's are the two brand name
right,
meat
exactly,
that came out
exactly.
of this company.
And
yeah.
we go out. I mean, we do go out of our way to try not to purchase those goods. And I just want to say, from sort of a Jewish ethical perspective, what they've done is appalling. I mean, it's absolutely beyond the pale of acceptable behavior. That's both my opinion and opinion of many others in my community.
Do some people in the synagogue? I've been following it a little in the Jewish Forward, and one of the stories said they interviewed some butchers, and they said the biggest problems they've heard, of course, they're butchers. What kind of problems are they going to hear? Is will we still be able to get our kosher meat? Has that been expressed a lot in the synagogue?
Not in my synagogue. Mm-hmm. I can't say that it hasn't been said in other places. I mean, from my perspective, I'd rather be a vegetarian than purchase meat. You know, but I know that's not everybody's opinion. I mean, I'm not a vegetarian, but rather than purchase this tainted meat. But you know, I think that's a really unfortunate position for the Forward to take because it kind of
they were just reporting the story.
I understand, but it sort of paints you know the Orthodox community in a certain light that's really unfortunate. There are a lot of us who take this very seriously.
I see what you mean. Okay, thanks a lot for the call, Jess. And let's go now to Lisa in Woodbridge. Hi, Lisa.
Hello.
Go ahead, please.
I was listening to the conversation. I read the article in the Times this morning, and there's a small reference to the applications filled out by the workers, which contain the false identities, other, I guess, U.S. citizens or manufactured documents. And they said that most likely the forms were not filled out by the workers. The forms were in English. The workers speak Spanish. Is there any type of claim that can be brought against the, I guess, manufacturer or the plant for falsifying those documents since they were most likely the ones that filled them out?
All right. Good catch to that reference. I guess you wrote that article. Julia, what do you know about that?
Well, I mean, I think this is precisely the basis, the central basis of the investigation that the federal prosecutor is conducting currently, which is a massive fraud by the employer in the hiring process, knowing hiring of illegal immigrants and harboring of illegal immigrants. The court documents that have emerged so far in the case certainly indicate that is the thrust of the investigation that's underway. I think it would be a mistake to think that the immigrants were entirely unaware of their illegal status. But I was quite struck by the fact that many of them, these are Guatemalan immigrants. In many cases, they're indigenous Guatemalan immigrants, so that Spanish is not even their first language. Mm. Many of them understood that this process where you go to the plant, you apply for a job, the human resources official says you need documents to be able to get a job, and you walk out the door and there's someone standing right outside the door of the plant that says, I can get you the documents, and they turn over a photograph and some you know form of identification from Guatemala, and the next day they have documents, and many of them weren't quite aware that this wasn't just the routine legitimate process for the way you got work at this plant. And when they went to federal court, I think the point that the interpreter made, who I wrote about, was that many of them never really did understand that they had committed a federal crime. They thought that they were being prosecuted again because they did not have legal status in the United States. So this very important distinction between federal criminal court and an immigration process, this was really way over their heads.
But most times when an illegal worker works in the United States, don't they do exactly what these workers did? File those papers?
Yes. I mean, every worker has to there's a form called an I-9, which the employer must fill out for every worker that starts a job. Fraudulent Social Security cards and state IDs, driver's licenses in some cases. And in this case, there was a large number of manufactured green cards, visas. This is what's happening. This is the way that illegal immigrants are able to get jobs. There's a huge industry out there for illegal documents. And in this case, this plant was distinctive because it has appeared that the supervisors, a number of the floor supervisors, were directly providing those documents.
And you say that's one of the reasons they may be prosecuted.
Yes.
And prosecuted more harshly. I have to ask you about, so you covered the story when it happens, it's massive in scope, they were very aggressive in their prosecution. Then you went back, or perhaps you've stayed in Iowa for a long time, you covered the backlash, a lot of protests about this and some counter-protests. Do you think the authorities were surprised by how vocal church groups, local citizens, immigration activists have been over this case?
I don't think that the prosecutor and the immigration authorities could have been surprised, because I think they designed this prosecution precisely to send a message that would not only echo throughout Iowa, but that would have national impact, which is that the Bush administration is going to be very tough on illegal workers. And if you are working illegally, you run the risk that you will be prosecuted as a federal felon and sent to prison. And so this is quite a different message than even in last year, when the administration was still seeking legislation in Congress that would have given legal status to many of these workers. And so this is really a total about face and a very tough message that I can only think that the prosecutor knew he was going to send.
Could you set the scene a little bit for me? What was going on in the fairgrounds right afterwards, and you know, how did those court proceedings go?
Well, this was a very unusual thing. This emergency court was set up in the fairgrounds. Is the National Cattle Congress, and the magistrate's courtroom was set up in the Electric Park Ballroom, which is inside the Cattle Congress. They have a big cattle fair there every year, and so it was a very surprising and unsettling and unusual proceeding for many involved, and what was so extraordinary was the speed with which these prosecutions were accomplished. The immigrants not only pled to federal charges, but they also waived all of their immigration rights in the course of these plea agreements. And that has raised many questions subsequently, because in a large number of cases, these immigrants have U.S. citizen children. They had spouses. They'd been here for many years. They might have had some kind of immigration claim, but they can no longer pursue those, because in order not to spend many months in prison, they waived those rights when they took the pleas.
If it were a movie, you have the first scene of the carcasses of the cattle being run across the assembly line, cut to the people being shackled and marched through the fairground. You know, if I was called in as a script doctor, I'd say, come on, a little too over the top. The symbolism is a little too obvious in that.
Well, I don't know about the movie, but it's a very tough situation for these immigrant families, and a community that had Postal Iowa. It's not a very big place, and it was a community that had more or less settled into its rhythms with this kosher plant and the Guatemalan families. And now many of these immigrants who once the raid happened, all they really wanted was just to be deported, and so they could go back home and get back to work.
Mm-hmm.
Now they're in federal prison in Kansas and Oklahoma and Georgia. They're all over the country, and it's a hard time for the families out there.
So you said the federal prosecutors, they wanted to send a strong message. They had to anticipate the backlash. Seeing how it all played out, seeing the attention that the Times has given it, seeing other news organizations as well, seeing the protests that happened the last week, do you think they're happy with everything? They maybe knew that it would happen, but if they had to rethink anything, would either federal authorities or local authorities, who have been on the record as being anti-illegal immigration, have done anything differently?
Well, I think before we answer that question, we have to wait and see what the results of the investigations that are underway. I think if there are not some serious indictments or at least labor violation charges brought against the management of this plant, that will be very controversial. So far, the immigrant workers have paid a very high price, and they have described a series of labor conditions that really were quite exceptional and under standard for Iowa and for meatpacking in the country. And The next shoe needs to drop, I think, before we can bring a conclusion about how federal prosecutors will feel about this case.
And of course, the Brian Lehrer Show and the New York Times will continue to cover the story. Julia Preston, national immigration reporter for the Times. Thanks very much, Julia.
Thank you.